what I need. I just don't have
Rudy, he can't fail. From the Clash, London Calling, here on WBAI. Go join Rudy. Prove that you can't fail either. Support WBAI 279-3400. And should be said at this point, if you want more information, if you want to speak to somebody, there's some phone numbers. You can reach us at 2600 Magazine, for one thing, 516-751-2600. Or you can write to 2600 P.O. Box 752, Middle Island, New York, 11953, and request more information on all of this, because a lot of interesting things are going on, a lot of scary things are going on, and we have all kinds of neat things coming your way. John Barlow, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, we want to, this person wants...
The matching fund.
A matching fund, okay. This is great. We have a matching fund from Peter of Scarsdale, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much, Peter of Scarsdale, for us matching fund. $150. $150. Now, if we're able to get calls totaling $150, and that's three callers, $55 each, and you'll each get a subscription to 2600 Magazine, we will actually be bringing in double that amount. Because that $150 will be matched by this very generous person from Scarsdale, New York. Thank you very much. 279-3400. Make that pledge. Three phone calls will do it. And once we hit that 150 mark, we're doubling the funds. We'll make 300 for the station. And I'll tell you, that'll make me feel good. I don't know about you out there in Wyoming, John, but...
I feel great about it.
It's just amazing to know that people care enough about this place to make that kind of commitment, to make that kind of pledge. Please be a part of this, 212-279-3400, because it's something that you'll feel good about for many months to come, and it's something that that'll make us feel like what we're saying means something, you know, that people are listening, people care, people are responding. 279-3400, area code 212. Now, we've got John Barlow on the phone from Wyoming. And we have other people that have been patiently waiting to speak to him. So I'd like to go to the phones, well, I guess as soon as possible. Any thoughts, John, while we're preparing to go to the phones?
Well, yeah, I sure have a lot of them, but why don't we find out what other people are thinking?
Okay, good idea. Good evening.
Hi. Your show is very enjoyable tonight, sort of like a breath of fresh air.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
two things. One, your Mr. Barlow's comments on science, especially on BAI. It's nice to hear somebody that's not busy trashing it, but actually attempting to define it. Too often defined as technology, as opposed to what I think it really is. But anyway, that sent me running to my bookshelf, and I. The thing that strikes me is that what you're talking about is nothing new. I ran over and I pulled off a study by the National Academy of Sciences from 1972 called Data Banks in a Free Society, which is a big, thick book which talks about all the things that you're talking about, only, that's a good 18 years ago. And then that also led me to two other books, and I just thought I'd mention them. I'm sure you're aware of them. One is Theodore Roszak's book, The Cult of Information.
Yeah.
And the other one is David Burnham's book, The Rise of the Computer State.
Oh, yes, that's a good one.
Yeah, I haven't read Burnham's new book on the IRS, which I believe to some degree was prompted by the stuff that he'd been doing with computer databases.
Well, you know, I've heard a few interviews that he's done on that new book, and it seems like something that's a must-read for any of us that are interested in this kind of thing. Because he outlines how the IRS is so powerful, so incredibly powerful. They're able to determine what a nonprofit organization is. They make up the rules as to what a nonprofit organization can and cannot do. It's just scary, all the control they have. But yes, David Burnham writes some very good material.
That was The Rise of the Computer State.
Right, right.
And
it outlines a lot of things like including some insidious uses for personal computers, used, I guess, in quotes, improperly. Things where, for example, it's everything, it goes back to the, where this issue was raised a lot in the 70s was with the issue of credit ratings. The horror stories of people who lost their homes, lost their mortgages, or couldn't get homes because their brother had a bad credit rating and they got keyed in wrong or something like that, which led to the legislation where you now have at least to some degree you can amend your credit files. The government doesn't go out of its way to let you know what your rights are in those respect. Also in New York State, you have the right to review your computer files, I believe, with the social service agencies. One of the things Burnham talks about is that the process involved I hope you've got 2 weeks off if you want to do it.
It's incredible the things that you have to go through. The credit report is a perfect example. Years ago, people didn't even know that all this information was being stored on them in computers. And who discovered it? Who brought that to the public's attention? It certainly wasn't the investigative media. It was computer hackers breaking in and finding all this information. And then the media jumped on the computer hackers and said, oh, look what these horrible hackers are doing. But in effect, what they had done was expose this whole system that had files on each and every one of us. And now at least we know the files are there. We can't really do anything about it. We can't say, don't store this information about me. You don't have a say in that matter. And if somebody accesses that data, they're not guilty of invading your privacy. They're guilty of invading the corporation's privacy. They're guilty of invading TRW's privacy. And that's something I have a lot of trouble with. Because
I have a real hard time with the idea that I have to pay $35 to get information about me, especially since coupled with that $35 is the requirement that I submit them a whole bunch more detailed information about me. I mean, if you ask TRW for your file, one of the conditions of getting it is that you have to give them more information.
Huh.
They don't just want your money, they want your data.
What kind of data do they ask for?
Oh, very detailed stuff. I mean, personal stuff, demographic stuff, how you earn X amount of your income, how you earn Y amount of your income. I mean, stuff that I don't think is any of their business.
Well, a lot of people would say that none of this stuff is anybody's business, but those people are being cast aside. You know, we don't live in a private world anymore. We have to make everything public.
Part of the scary part of it is, and I've had this thing. I notice all the surveillance cameras that pop up all over the place, and the number of times I have to give out my social security number. And you know, I think back, and what happens is Burnham talks about it is that the loss of privacy and security is sort of insidious, and that as you lose it, you become less and less aware of what you've lost, and more acquiescent, I guess, to losing more. it sort of becomes, you know, you think back, if you go back and you look at one of the reasons that the Social Security Administration was originally opposed in the 30s is because people were afraid of a national identity system, which is essentially what it's become.
Of course.
And now nobody gives it a second thought. I mean, when you apply for a job, you go to school, you know, on your school ID, it's a Social Security number.
You said your Social Security number, what you should have said is your name, because that's really what it is.
Yeah.
But to go along that point a little further, if you give something up, you're not only giving it up for yourself, you're giving it up for your children and your grandchildren, and they won't even know what it was like to have that particular piece of freedom, and they won't think anything of it.
That's right.
And that's why it's so important to hold on to these things. If we say, well, I guess having surveillance cameras on every block isn't that bad a thing because it protects us against all the pickpockets, well, your kids aren't going to say, is this a good thing or isn't this a good thing, because they're going to be so used to it, it'll be a part of their lives. It'll be like us saying traffic lights are no good.
In the past, for example, with your bank records, for example, they used to be your bank records, and now the courts have ruled that your bank records really aren't your bank records, which gets, I think it's, what's the unreasonable search and seizure, that the Fourth Amendment, Fifth
yeah,
Amendment?
Yeah, that's right.
So what they've done is the courts have jerry-rigged things so that now your bank records are actually the bank's records, so that when the Fed or the Treasury or whomever or a private corporation decides they want to look at them, the decision of whether they're allowed to be looked at is the bank's and not yours. And banks very rarely refuse the federal government, apparently, when they're asked for things like that. And they've done that with other records, where in the past they used to be your personal property legally, and if you went to court, you had some redress. In many cases, they've redefined what belongs to you in terms of your personal possessions in order to end around the Constitution. But anyway, let me put in, let others speak, and just put in one pitch for the station at 279-3400. You guys need all the help you can get, and maybe they should put you back-to-back with the personal computer show.
we probably have all kinds of unending ethical questions, you know.
We won't discuss station policy over the air, but that's my two cents worth.
It's just, you can never put two people into technology in the same room, because they'll disagree on so many different things. But again, that's good, you know, in a way.
Good show.
All right, thanks for calling.
Good night.
All right. And I understand we have one caller so far to help match that fund. We have a $150 matching fund, and it would be a shame if we could not raise that amount in the time that we have left. If that one caller is, in fact, making a pledge, I believe that means we have two more to go at the $55 level. And for $55, you'll get a full year of 2600 Magazine, the Hacker Quarterly. You can find out all about these privacy concerns and what computer hackers, what those nefarious little beasts are up to, and what's really going on. Some things that will definitely surprise you, and most importantly, you'll be educated. 279-3400, area code 212. Show that WBAI means something to you, and that that education means something to you. It's really an honor to be able to speak with people on the radio here about things like the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment and all those important things that we should all know about. But how many of us really do? How many of us value these things anymore? And why don't we? You know, why is education such a hard thing to come by these days? It makes you wonder, you know, are we being encouraged to be stupid? And if we are, what does the future hold? What's going to happen to all these uneducated people? They're going to be guided around like sheep. And
they'll make great consumers.
They sure will. Paying for everything left and right, and not having a shred of privacy left. Well, while I'm shuddering with that thought, pick up your phone, dial 279-3400, please. Show us your support, and make a pledge to the radio station, and bring us closer to that goal, because by making the goal of $150, we will be doubling that goal and getting a matching fund and making $300. And that's how the station is built, folks. That's how we got to where we are today, by one person doing something, then another person, then another person. And that's sort of how conversations start. We started talking tonight about the hacker raids with the Steve Jackson games and the emergency 911 and the shutdown of the FRAC newsletter. And more people are talking about it now, and word is getting out, and people are telling other people. Before you know it, a substantial number of people will be educated about this. It's the same thing with calling in and pledging WBAI, because every person counts. Every pledge counts. It all adds up. And we are over the $200,000 mark. We've been having this fundraiser now for about 2 weeks. And for us to get to that point, it sounds like an incredible amount of money, and it is an incredible amount of money, but the fact of the matter is we need an incredible amount of money just to pay the rent and keep the transmitter going and all that kind of thing. But for us to get to that stage, we needed every single one of you that has called in so far. Every $45, $50 pledge, it all added up. And it's added up to this incredible amount of money. So $150, folks, what I'm trying to say is $150 is not much to shoot for. It really isn't. Two more callers can do it, and we can continue with the program. 212-279-3400. 212-279-3400. Make that pledge and bring us closer to the matching fund and convey a message. Show us that this kind of radio is important to you. And by showing us that, you'll be ensuring that we can continue doing this in the future, because there are a lot of issues, a lot of topics that have yet to come out of this case. You know, you think Twin Peaks is interesting, folks? No, this is this has more hidden innuendos than you can imagine. Give a call now, 212-279-3400. I believe we have two callers. Yes, I believe we do. So one more call is all it's going to take. 212-279-3400. Let's go back to the phones, and hopefully I won't have to ask again. What do you think, John?
Hey, it ought to be a done deal.
Okay. Let me just warn the folks that are calling in on the call-in line, which is 212-279-3407, that John Perry Barlow is in Wyoming, and he's got a rather distant phone connection. In fact, John, I was wondering maybe you could not make any noise for a second, and I can just bring up the volume of your long-distance phone line, which I think is quite impressive, and I'd like folks to just hear the sounds that go with a true long-distance connection here. Hold on. Well, it didn't sound quite as good as I hoped it would, but it's kind of a buzz there. But you're out in the sticks a bit, and the phone connection is rather far away and not of the loudest clarity. So the people calling in will be conferencing you together with John out there in Wyoming. You may have trouble hearing each other, so be careful when you speak that someone else isn't speaking at the same time. It's something you got to watch out for. Again, our technology here isn't as good as it could be, I suppose, but we're moving there. We're moving in that direction, and you can help us get there by calling and making a pledge. 212-279-3400. Let's take some calls. Good morning.
Good morning. Covering a very important area this morning. I'm enjoying the program. An especially fine guest, I thought, and Steve Jackson earlier from Austin. And if people missed that BBS number, which I noted down, maybe I can repeat that, was 512-447-4449, a fellow who's personally being given a very hard time. I have a couple of points that, shall we say, bothered me that John Barlow has brought to the BAI audience here that I'd like to address. But first I wanted to say that one of the callers earlier to Jackson from Texas identified a certain bulletin board in Manhattan, I believe, something about red flag. I don't know if he gave it. I'm sure he didn't give the phone number of that bulletin board, and maybe if he's listening or someone who knows the board I'm speaking of, maybe that person can call the switchboard at WBAI tomorrow, leave the bulletin board number there. I and maybe some others would like to know that board, a board that's discussing the thrust of America these days, encroaching fascism, if you would.
Well, okay, but also another suggestion that might get it to you a little faster would be if somebody knows that number or is involved with that board to call the bulletin board that you just gave the number for and leave that number there, then you can call it and retrieve it.
Great idea. May I say as well, just on general encroaching fascism, there's going to be on BAI a fine program on May 28th, 3:30 to 4:30, or is it 2:30 to 3:30? One of those hours on Monday, May 28th, 2 days before Gorbachev gets here. An analytical program, a very revolutionary program, shall I say, and people ought to listen. On the subjects raised by the caller from the person you're speaking with from out west, Wyoming, one first observation is that although a government certainly has concern over maintaining its what it considers to be its rights in communication and not having people muscle in on its territory, the much greater problem, in my view, is the corporations who control communications, who don't want any muscling in on their territory. I mean, after all, you know, Baby Bells and Big Bell are not government, nor is TRW government. On the other hand, government, you might say, is a stepchild of those corporations. General Electric is not government. Well, General Electric is not supposed to be government, but General Electric, in fact, is becoming government. That's perhaps what fascism is. There was a statement made by John down there in the West, or out there in the West, which I find almost amazing. A statement went something like this: in the fullness of time, John, if you're listening, you said something like this: in the fullness of time, the Constitution will stop them. That is, these guys who are taking liberties with our liberties. You said also, I have some limited faith in the courts, especially on the high end. Oh, that's almost an exact quote. The problem, the reason why we've been losing at an unprecedented rates our liberties one after the other in the past 10 years, the reason why every Monday afternoon is a horror listening to the new set of losses coming up out of Washington, is because the courts, the federal courts, are packed by Reagan-Bush. They have named more than 50% of the individuals who sit on the federal benches. Even if you win on local levels important matters, those questions are always eventually thrown into federal courts, and you lose there, certainly if it gets to the Supreme Court, because they've got at least four, more like five of the nine, and any one of the three older, reasonable guys dies in the next 4 years, 6 years, it's finished. We've got a Scalia up there. We almost had a Bork. And yet, you know, John Barlow there tells us that he's a Republican rancher. You know, we went through 8 years of a Republican rancher.
Okay, let's give John a chance to reply to that, okay?
Well, look, I'll have to agree with you. My favorite oxymoron is Justice Rehnquist. But I guess I'm basically optimistic. I feel like there is a popular commitment to the Constitution in this country, and that popular commitment expresses itself most succinctly in the courts. I don't have any faith at all in the other two branches of government.
Well,
and I guess if I'm going to find any repository for optimism, it's going to be in the ability of people, regardless of their ideologies, to listen to a case and decide it on its merits. And I would, you know, I'm not sanguine about our chances with the current Supreme Court. I would readily agree to some of your concerns, but you have to look at the fact that that court, in spite of having been packed by Reagan, still came down with a pretty reasonable decision on the flag, which is now subject to great controversy. But
I should point out that was by a very narrow margin, though, wasn't it?
It was. But that wasn't perhaps the rationale of those who make decisions in these type matters. You might say that the court, perhaps even in retaking the flag case, is looking for the opportunity to create an amendment to the Constitution. And in fact, to turn all political discussion in this time of crashing, collapsing standard of living for most working Americans, gifts such as we've never seen to the super rich, like cutting of their tax rates from 70% down to 28%, while the bottom tax rate is raised from 11% to the new minimum 15%, the minimum wage frozen for 10 years at $3.35, and Bush fighting tooth and claw against any raise and had to give just a few pennies until 1992. The horrors, one on top of the next, are not the rate of those horrors are not diminishing. What kind of housing we're living, education which is unaccessible, $20,000 per year, who's got them? But the discussion of those significant matters is waylaid by our all suddenly having to turn our attention to whether or not it should or should not be legal or illegal to burn the flag. And that's where discussion will move beginning in July or August of this year, when the Supreme Court, on an accelerated calendar, comes down and tells us we are going to indeed require you to have a constitutional amendment if you want to touch this little decision that we've thrown out.
Okay.
Very calculated.
Okay.
There are hundreds of matters the Supreme Court can bring to its calendar. It chose as the most monumental matter it wanted to deal with right now on an accelerated basis the matter of the flag. It's a scam.
Okay, sir. I understand what you're saying. I don't want to get too far away from the subject tonight, so I'm going to give John a chance to respond to that, and we're going to take another call. Thanks very much for calling. John?
Well, I think the point he brings up that's more serious, and I don't know. If I felt as pessimistic as he apparently does, I don't know how I'd make it up in the morning, but the largest source of pessimism I see is the withering of government, oddly enough, and the rise of the corporate state. I look at what's going on in Washington, and I see a sclerosis and paralysis that's entered the federal government that is going to ultimately end in its dissolution, and the replacement, obviously, is going to be the modern multinational corporation. Now, I don't know who watches those institutions if there isn't government of sufficient force to check their excesses. But I think that we're swiftly reaching a point where there isn't going to be enough government in the world to stop an institution like Mitsubishi.
Okay, now
General Motors.
I'd like to take the opportunity to sort of steer this 50,000-watt radio station back over towards the subject of the computer hackers and high technology and all that kind of thing. This is an interesting discussion. That's why I'm doing that, because this could go on for hours more. I'd like to talk specifically about what happened on May 8th. A little bit more, because I've also got the press release that the Secret Service put out on that day. We discussed a little bit of it before, but I think there's a couple of things in here that that deserve some attention. Over 150 special agents of the U.S. Secret Service, teamed with numerous local and state law enforcement agencies, served 27 search warrants on Tuesday, May 8th, 1990. In various cities across the United States. Cities included Chicago, Cincinnati, Detroit, Los Angeles, Miami, Newark, New York, Phoenix, Pittsburgh, Plano, Texas, never heard of that one before, Richmond, Virginia, San Diego, San Jose, and Tucson, Arizona. The warrants stem from a 2-year investigation of illegal computer hacking activities. The United States Secret Service, in cooperation with the U.S. Attorney's Office and the Attorney General for the State of Arizona, established an operation utilizing sophisticated investigative techniques to target computer hackers who traffic in and abuse stolen credit card numbers, who use unauthorized long-distance dialing codes, and who conduct unauthorized access and damage to computers. Now, as I said before, I don't know of any computer hackers that would argue with the point that people who steal credit card numbers and buy things and don't pay for them are committing a crime and should be punished. Yes, very much so. I don't think that's what we're talking about today. And that last statement where they refer to these things as long-distance dialing codes, I don't know anybody who refers to them as long-distance dialing codes. And I think that sort of tells you that they're kind of out of touch with the technology. You know, they're talking about Sprint codes or MCI codes or something like that. I don't know anybody that calls them dialing codes, because you don't even dial anything anymore. But that's a minor point, I suppose. On May 8, 1990, 40 computers and 23,000 disks were seized. The conceivable criminal violations of this operation have serious implications for the health and welfare of all individuals, corporations, and United States government agencies relying on computers and telephones to communicate. Now, I'm going to read that sentence again, except this time I'd like you to think of it in the way that we've been presenting it tonight, in the violations that the federal government is guilty of. The conceivable criminal violations of this operation have serious implications for the health and welfare of all individuals, corporations, and U.S. government agencies relying on computers and telephones to communicate. I think it carries a bit more weight when we say it. The following facts demonstrate the potential for extensive damage in this case, and I think this is quite interesting here. The telecommunications industry is estimating monetary losses as high as $50 million. Not quite sure where they get that figure, but that's what they claim they're losing because of computer hackers. But the more important point here, hackers had the ability to access and review the files of hospital patients. Furthermore, they could have added, deleted, or altered vital patient information, possibly causing life-threatening situations. Now, John, have you heard anything about that?
No, that's incredible.
That's a new one. Now,
I
have not been able to find out from anybody which hospital this is, but you'll notice in the wording of this, they could have added, deleted, or altered vital patient information. They could have. They did not, but they could have. So are we going to convict people of crimes of what they could have done?
I didn't catch whether that was a million or a billion. I don't know whether it's a huge lie or grotesquely huge lie.
It's
$50 million or $50 billion lost.
Oh, you're talking about the other point. That was $50 million with an M.
Million?
Yeah, which I guess isn't all that much if the entire telecommunications industry. But I think that's minor compared to this hospital point.
Let me ask you something. In the course of my discussions with various hackers and crackers over the last several months, I've come to the conclusion that there aren't more than about 30 or 40 of these guys that are really adept at this. How many people do you think are actually doing this?
Well, I think many, many people are interested in this. Judging from the response that I've seen with 2600 and with hackers across the world, everybody wants to know more about this.
Well, that's not my question.
No, that's not.
How many people are actually able to do it?
Well, you see, you learn how to do it, and you learn by asking questions, so it's kind of hard to say. You know, if right now you're probably right. There's probably only about 30 or 40 people that are really good at this kind of thing, and they're probably all the subjects of investigations right now. But then there's a whole lot of other people that have the interest and the potential to learn how systems operate and how they can be abused and how they can be strengthened. And those are the people that we're trying to reach, the people that have a curiosity and want to satisfy that curiosity. And I think it's important that we do reach these people, because the alternative is to simply allow huge computer systems to be run by a series of laws, to be run by the government. And I think that's scary. Let me just go back to this hospital thing for a second, because I have a point to make here. They had the ability to access and review the files, okay? They did not, according to this. They could have added, deleted, or altered vital patient information, but according to that implies that they did not. Now, by charging all of these people with that crime and by making it stick in people's minds that they could have done these horrible things to hospitals, they're ignoring the real point of the issue, the real point being that there's a hospital out there somewhere that's open to this kind of abuse. Have they fixed that system? Have they identified the hospital and said, hey, you guys are doing something bad here by having wide open doors that people can access and alter information? I mean, I think that's where the real crime is, the person that left that door open in the first place. We're not talking about a phone company computer or a credit computer or something that just has monetary value attached to it. We're talking about something that has human lives. And I think when something like this happens, it should be exposed and people should know what's really going on. Instead of blaming something on hackers who didn't even do anything, all they did was find out about it, apparently, and they could have done this, so now they're being blamed as if they did do something. The incompetence, though, is being protected, and we're all sort of in a conspiracy of silence about it. I think that's the real issue.
Well, I think the real issue is the fact that that people had the capacity to do it and didn't do it. What we have here is the best protection of all, which is conscience, and it's being exercised. I can't imagine anybody who would be so debased that he'd want to endanger the life of a stranger for the hell of it. And the problem with this statement is that there is contained in it the assumption that the ability is the same thing as the desire. And my perception of human nature is far from that. But maybe I have an unnecessarily naive notion about my fellow man. You know, really, what this stuff is, the scare tactics that are involved here remind me a lot of the scare tactics that surround terrorism and child abduction. In 1987, this country lost 7 of its citizens to terrorist acts worldwide. And yet, we have completely revised our system of government, our security systems, how we travel. Practically every element of our lives has been revised in order to meet this incredible threat of terrorism. It's the same thing with child abduction. I mean, if you look at a milk carton or a post office wall or anything like that, you'll see evidence that children are being snatched away by the thousands every day, and yet there are fewer than 10 abductions by strangers in the United States a year. And what we have here is another case where the authorities are trying to create public hysteria that will result in increased control over civil liberties. And, it's pretty transparent.
Okay, I'd like to go back to the phones, but first, a bit of information to pass on. The modem number for that computer known as Tentra Red Flag in New York City, it's 212-406-9108. And if you want voice and technical support, 212-406-9107. And I'm also told that we did get a couple of calls, but we're halfway to the matching fund of $150, so we need 75 more. And two more callers could do that very easily. In fact, one more caller could do that. Remember, for a pledge of $55, you can get a full year of 2600 Magazine and keep updated on all these issues as they occur. 212-279-3400. It's a very important number to call because by helping us reach that goal, and we only have a couple more minutes to do it, we need to get a couple more calls so that we can raise $75 in the next few minutes. And by raising that $75, we'll actually be making $300 because it'll go towards a $150 matching fund. 150 times 2 is 300. Simple arithmetic, and it all adds up, and that's what's been going on over the last couple of weeks. Help us out here. 212-279-3400. If you find yourself listening to the radio now, if you think this is interesting, there's a lot more coming. There really is. And we want to make those radio programs available to you. We want to bring you alternative ideas and new information. But in order to continue doing that, we've got to stay on the air. And in order for us to stay on the air, we need your support. So you can help us take a big step now. If you're one of the next couple of callers, you'll help us reach that matching grant and double the money that we get. And it'll make us feel real good this morning. In addition to feeling really tired, we'll feel really good. Let's take a couple more calls, but please, if you are trying to get through on the call-in line and you find that it's busy, make a call to the pledge line because there's people waiting there, and we really need to hear from you. 212-279-3400. 279-3400. Good evening.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, hi. First I'd like to say that I've enjoyed John's music for a long time.
John, can you hear this person?
Just barely.
Okay.
Okay, is that any better?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, I wanted to say that I enjoyed your music for a long time. On the computer hacking side of it, I can't help but notice there's a little inconsistency. At one point, it's okay for people to go into computer systems and unauthorized access to computer systems and just poke around and look at other people's information. But then again, on the other hand, you're defensive about giving TRW your information. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're talking about, and the reason for that inconsistency is that I don't have the same definition of I don't have a parity between individuals and institutions. I have a basic, almost blind faith in human beings, and I have absolutely no faith in institutions.
So, human beings as a group, in other words, doesn't make it, but just individuals.
I don't think that human beings as a group are human beings any longer. I think that after a certain point, they become a collective organism which is not in any way human.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I guess it doesn't. You know, I don't know. You know, it still seems kind of not. You know, it doesn't really flow. But
well, I think what John is saying is that different rules apply for individuals and for big corporate giants.
Let me try to amplify that a little bit.
On another level, there's everybody on the face of the earth makes up a group, you know. So that's where the inconsistency is. But I think that some of the it's like we're too late to stop any kind of invasion of privacy or any kind of crackdown that the government and that group of people, the government and corporations, that they want to perpetrate on us, because they've had the technology for years now. And you know, John's call, you were commenting on the quality of the audio from coming out from Wyoming. I'm pretty sure that phone call gets routed through to Denver and then immediately beamed to a satellite, and which is picked up then over here on the East Coast somewhere. I think up in New Hampshire is where they pick them up. But it's not like it's traveling 3,000 miles in a piece of wire.
No, it's traveling 50,000 miles through space, which is even more remarkable.
Right, but as it gets transmitted, the another Supreme Court ruling, which I mentioned to Emmanuel before, was the last year the Supreme Court came down and ruled that anything that's transmitted over through the air or through the ether is fair game for anybody. Anybody can monitor it, anybody can pick up on it, and anybody can use the information that they gain that way. As long as it's transmitted through the air and not solely transmitted through wires, it's open.
Is that what you're saying, that's the way things stand now?
Yeah, well, that's what the Supreme Court decided last year for us.
Because it's still illegal to listen to certain kinds of communications based on the ECPA of 1986.
Yeah, but you see, that's what I don't understand. You know, the ECPA says that, but then this. Hello.
Yeah, we're getting some loud clicks. Go ahead.
On the other side, the Supreme Court ruling came out after the ECPA, after that ECPA was made law. So, you know, it's just kind of one of those things that, on one hand they make this one law, and then Tom Waits says that the large print giveth and the small print taketh away. You know, and that's where that's at.
Okay, we're going to try to take a couple more calls. Thanks
okay.
so much for calling.
Hey, that's. I just wanted to bring up those couple of points there.
By the way, I think that the idea that the small print taketh away is critical, because the erosion of liberty now is all piecemeal, and it's little bits at a time. The example that somebody brought up earlier about the legal declaration that your bank records belong to the bank and not to you is a classic case of what would seem to be a very minor instance, and yet I think is fundamental.
Yeah, let me just make one more point. You
real quick.
You wanted to put faith in the Supreme Court in deciding your case, and you know, you make the point that, well, the Supreme Court kind of did okay in the flag burning case, but since the flag burning case, they've also outlawed abortions for women, right, and restricted abortions for women, and they've made it okay to execute retarded teenagers.
Okay, well, again.
Disadvantage of another institution. It's just, that's not what it is.
Okay, well, I guess we'll have to leave it there at this point, but this is a story that's going to be continuing in the weeks and possibly months ahead. We want to thank all the people that have called up and called in to pledge their support as well. We want to thank Steve Jackson for being a part of the program earlier. We want to thank John Perry Barlow for being here now. And, John, I should remind you that the Grateful Dead show is coming up right now.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, in fact, you might be very interested in talking to the folks involved in this, because they've been bringing this kind of program to you for quite a while. In fact, here's one of them now.
Yes, let me introduce myself, John. My name is Dan Ivanovich, and we get an opportunity at this late night hour to indulge in Grateful Dead music. And I'd certainly like, you know, just some comments. I don't have any prepared questions or anything, but as a songwriter and someone who's been associated with them, any comments that you'd feel like making would be more than appreciated.
You know, you're breaking up. I mean, it's interesting with all this discussion of telecommunications. I'm hearing the first two or three syllables in the last syllable of everything you say. I don't have the slightest idea who you are or what you're saying.
Well, okay, maybe he should be using the microphone I'm at. So what I'm going to do is sort of ease my way out of here, and then we'll see if we can communicate with you. Otherwise, we might just have to pick up the phone and speak that way. But as far as the telecommunication system, yes, you're becoming acquainted with the famous BAI phone system, which could certainly use a bit of work. And it will get that work if we get some more pledges. 212-279-3400. That'll keep us going. That'll strengthen us and make the technical things around here work a little bit better. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. The program has been The Fifth Corner. I want to thank everyone that's played a part in it. We've brought out some very important issues tonight. There are more. And by making that call now, by pledging your support for $55, you can get $2,600 in the mail for a full year, and you'll become probably the most educated person on your block. Thanks again to everybody that that participated, and I guess I'll see you all in about 2 weeks or so, 11:45 on Thursday night, Friday morning, that kind of thing. Until then, good night. Let's go out with some King Missile.
All right, good morning. This is Morning Dew on WBAI New York. And as happens, we inherit the wonderful guests from other shows. And we have John Barlow, who is the songwriter. Are you there, John?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Let me give you a little more volume there so you come in loud and clear. For the Grateful Dead, who has written almost a third of the songs. Do you have any favorite songs that you've written that...
Oh, yeah, I'm real fond of Cassidy.
Cassidy, you know, instrumentally is performed so beautifully. Cassidy's a beautiful song, man. I love that song, too.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know. On a good night, I love any of them, and on a bad night, I can't stand any of them. They have over the years. I've heard them played a lot of different ways.
Are you still a rancher? Are you?
No, I got out of the cattle business a couple of years ago. I found that, you know, rock and roll wasn't paying me well enough to keep me in cows.
That's the equation, huh?
Well, that had been the equation for 17 years. But it just became so anti-lucrative to run a large ranch in Wyoming that I decided I'd get away from bulls and into BS, which is a hell of a lot more remunerative.
Yeah, you know, New York has turned into a media town. I mean, every corner is a video store, every bookshop, something to do with media.
New York was always a media town. I mean, you look at how many copies of newspapers sold before there were electronic media in New York. I mean, it's stupefying the number of words that were showered on the people of that town in the 30s every day.
Yeah, yeah. Can you talk about maybe some experiences you've had with the Dead? I mean, they've obviously changed your life in many ways.
Oh, yeah. Well, gee, I mean, you know, I've known those guys. I mean, my closest friend since I was 14 is a member of the Grateful Dead, right?
Right, right.
What?
I said right.
Right, so, you know, I could go on until day after tomorrow talking about experiences I've had with the Grateful Dead. You know, and I've known all those guys since before there was any such thing.
Let me ask you another question. There's a feeling here that they may be slowing down their touring. But when I see...
Well, it's not so much a matter of slowing down touring as being increasingly cornered as to where we can go. I mean, we've been banned in Berkeley, for God's sake. Nobody ever got banned in Berkeley before.
That was a college, right?
Well, it was a combination of the college and the Berkeley police.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact was that we weren't welcome on either front, really.
Yeah, because I can understand.
It's increasingly the case. I mean, there are just not that many places that want to deal with the aggravation, I guess.
No, I think that it's partly the phenomenon. I mean, definitely, it's almost a lifestyle to people who go on tour and stay on tour, and who camp out and so on and so forth.
Hey, it's not just a lifestyle, it's a religion.
Do you want to talk about that element in some other songs?
Well, you know, I don't have any choice as to what I write a song about, really. I mean, it's just whatever arrives that seems to fit. I'd love to be able to write songs about things, but I've never been able to do that yet.
Uh-huh. Ken, when we were on the phone, you gave me a quote, which I value a lot, about the artist. Can you please...
Well, you were talking about where poetic inspiration comes from, and an artist friend of mine years ago said to me something I think is just about right, which is that art is what happens when God decides to speak through a human being.
Yeah, I like that a lot. That answers a lot of questions about art and truth and so on and so forth. Yeah, I you know, we're around here. We're targeted by the DEA, And it's not funny because actually, members sitting almost 6 inches away from me, not now, tonight, but have been arrested or charged with, felonies and so on and so forth. And it's not a funny matter at all.
Well, I mean, I'm actually one of the ways in which I get through life is with a black sense of humor, and so I've laughed at a lot of inappropriate things.
Do you have any?
I don't think you can seriously think about the war on drugs without laughing out loud. I mean, think about this for a second. We got a war on drugs in this country, in spite of the fact that the three most physically and emotionally dangerous drugs are in plentiful and cheap supply.
I'm a victim of cigarettes, so that must be one of them.
Oh, yeah.
And I know my dad died at 45, which is a very young age.
Right.
And I agree with you on that. I just want to ask you something, because I love hang...
That's not funny. I don't know what is.
No, yeah, okay. Do you have any hangman humor, any gallows humor? Because it's...
You want to hear a good, sick joke? Is that what you're asking for?
Yes, I am.
Okay, all right. Here it is. It's late at night. I can ask you this. What do you get when you cross Lassie with a pit bull?
I don't know. A beautiful looking tough dog.
No, you get a dog that rips your leg off and then goes for help.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's we were promised in the 60s that we would come into control of the planet and of the country, and that just doesn't seem to have happened at all.
And who promised you that?
I don't know. I think Janis Joplin did herself.
Find that person and...
I think Jimmy
matter
did.
Matter up with them. No, the 60s... Look, as far as I'm concerned, the real meat of the matter is now at hand. I don't look at the 60s as having been a period that ended. I mean, I feel like the work continues, and we're doing it right now. I mean, you're doing it at 3 o'clock in the morning in New York, and I'm doing it in Wyoming, and every deadhead in America is doing it with everything he does. The 60s were not about control. The 60s were about relinquishment of control. And I think that's happening to a very large extent. I mean, you see... A lot of the stuff that's going on now, jeopardizing civil liberties, I think is a reaction to an institutional awareness that there's no longer any such thing as God-given authority, and there hasn't been since 1967.
You have to negotiate personally, person to person, that there's no divine right to rule? Is that what you're trying to say?
Right. I mean, I think that we've entered a time where if you want to declare yourself exempt, you can do it. I mean, you have to exercise a little judgment. I mean, you don't go up and blow marijuana smoke in the cop's face and expect perfect impunity. But I find that I can do and say pretty much anything I want and get away with it. I just have to seize that freedom for myself.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I want to just...
And I couldn't have done that in the 50s. And I couldn't have done that in 1965. And I can do that now.
I see what you're saying, yeah. Yeah. I just want to reiterate, John, that we do believe in the music, Grateful Dead music.
Well, so do I. I mean, that's why I do it.
Yeah. And I just to finish my comment, I look at the Grateful Dead on stage, and I look how dedicated they are to what they're doing, and I'm saying these guys are never going to quit. They're never going to stop touring. They're never going to quit. That's the feeling I get.
Well, I remember one time about 10 or 15 years ago, I was in a hotel in Denver with Mickey Hart, and we were at actually sort of a low ebb. This has had its cycles all along, and this was kind of a grim period. I can't remember. I don't think we hadn't put out anything worth listening to in a while, and the audience was kind of tapering off, and people were having a lot of trouble with drugs, and it was just kind of a dark time. And I said, well, what are you going to do after this, man? And he said, well, I expect to go on doing this until we're doing it in Holiday Inns. And, you know, I think that that's probably about right. I mean, I don't know what any of those guys would do besides this.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely dedicated. I mean, there's a lot of dedication all around, you know, but they're definitely dedicated, and that, it's just beautiful to see, you know. And
yeah, it is. I mean, especially in the face of mounting difficulty from the standpoint of social and legal pressure.
Yeah.
But I mean, I feel like this whole matter with the war on drugs and the oppression that's being foisted on the deadheads at the moment is going to come to a head. And what we have to do as a group of people is simply not engage it. You know, I mean, instead of screaming up against the wall, just say no thank you, you know. I mean, opt out. Don't deal with it.
I think that's very wise advice. I understand you, and if you want to restate that again in a different way, please feel...
Well, I mean, the big mistake from a political, and I would say spiritual standpoint in the 60s, was that we developed this symmetry of nastiness between the forces of liberation and the forces of control that eventually demeaned both sides. And you know, instead of symmetry, what you want is complementarity. If you're in gridlock, the way to deal with it is to take a side street, you know. Don't meet it head on.
Yeah, I agree. I was always uncomfortable with the Appalachian pigs.
Yeah, right.
I didn't feel that.
You call somebody a pig and he'll act like one.
Yeah, I didn't feel that it did it. You know, you call a cow a pig, it'll
exactly. I mean, you know, there was this willingness to deny people their humanity and then shock and surprise when they returned the favor.
Yeah,
you know, I don't care what somebody thinks, he's another human being.
Where do you see us going? I mean, I think what you're saying is you can do your thing and get what you want for yourself in this time now. Where do you see us going maybe after the year 2000?
Well, I think about that a lot because I've started to become a student of technology, or actually a practicing techno crank. And I look at sort of the dissolution of government as we know it, but not necessarily in the most positive light, because what I see erecting itself to assume all those governmental duties is the modern corporation. You know, that will be the facilitator of the economics and the transporter of goods and services.
But hasn't that, for example, in farming done irreparable damage?
Yes, it has. I mean, I'm not saying that this is a particularly optimistic view of things. I don't know how that's going to work out, because I have the lowest expectations of corporations. I think the corporations are another life form that is utterly without conscience.
Well,
it has no regard whatsoever for human beings.
The basis of economics is the arbitration of value according to money, and you can't give things value by money. You have to give things value by their inherent value.
Well, except for the fact that we've entered into a stage of civilization where inherent value is a very slippery matter, because how do you value information? I mean, is it appropriate to say that anybody owns knowledge?
If
it is appropriate, how do you put a value on it? I mean, I was talking to the earlier show host here about a document that has supposedly been stolen from Bell South, six-page bureaucratic document that was stolen by a computer hacker. Bell South has valued this document, which is the most boring thing I've ever read, at $79,445. Now, I don't know how the hell they came to that figure, but it sort of brings up the point. I mean, we've got most of what is now valuable in this society is not a tangible thing that you can easily come to a market for it.
John?
It's a thing that, that can be reproduced infinite numbers of times.
John?
Yeah.
I want to put it in these terms. I've heard a quote that the man said that the problem with people today is that when they see a flower, they think it's a dream.
That's a great... Who said that?
It's a Zen quote.
That's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, and it's, you look at a forest, you have to appreciate the forest for what it is, not for the monetary gain you can get from cutting down the trees.
Well, all right, you know, see, I think that there's a sign of hope there, because the percentage of people in the world that appreciate a forest for what it is a very great deal higher than it was 50 years ago. I mean, granted, there are fewer forests and getting fewer all the time, but, you know, where once there was just John Muir, there is now, 70 or 80% of the people in this country who are willing to make economic sacrifices in order to save forests. So I think that, you know, the most important thing is consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, there is this old sort of, leftover notion from the rest of the 20th century that the way to change society is by imposed control, whether it's with communism or the New Deal or fascism or social democracy. And really, the way to change society is by changing consciousness. That's just the hard way. But that's the only way that's going to work. And it is working.
All right.
It's just slow, you know.
I mean,
1967, I wanted it to all happen overnight. You know, I figured we all saw the light, and that illumination would change everything overnight. And really, that illumination is still there. It's just diffuse. You know, it's the same amount of light. It's just where it was blindingly bright to a few of us, it's now something that everybody experiences.
I want to give a little pitch here. As it happens, most of our show is devoted to Merle Saunders.
Really?
Which we interviewed last week, and his Blues from the Rainforest, which we will be playing shortly.
Great. I wish he were actually there. I'd have you tell him hello for me.
Yeah. So that's my answer. That's what I was looking for, is that it's a question of consciousness.
Yeah. And actually, that's been the Grateful Dead's position all along. You know, we've never had a political position on anything, because our attitude has always been, if you change consciousness, politics will take care of itself. And that's...
Or no politics.
We had an experience recently with the White House that indicated to us that even people on that level are starting to believe that, so...
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we have to move along. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Okay, well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, too. Keep up the good work.
Do not hang up.
Okay.
Okay.
I won't hang up.
All right. And if you're ever in New York, or if you ever feel like giving us a call, please do.
Well, if you feel like giving me a call, please do. Though, you know, call me before you go on the air by a few hours so that I don't get a phone call from you in the middle of the night.
Very good. All right, thank you.
Sure.